faces go turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. Alrighty, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. 1st of June. Boy, been a long time waiting for this one. I was thinking when we scheduled this class in Washington back in December, I said, well, yeah, sure, I'd be glad to. But, 6 months away, and I kind of had my doubts whether we'd get the attendance that we needed and whatnot. So it is refreshing to see the people that are working on that end on my behalf to help me to get the classes filled or get the class filled and all that stuff. And I am real excited about going. I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun. I am not excited about driving 1,500 miles again, but I'll be excited when I get there, and I'll probably be excited when I get home. Amy said, you're not going to want to come home, are you? And I said, well, I might stay for a while. But I wanted her to go so bad. I think it'd be so, if there was some way, you know, if we could just slaughter all the animals that we got now and put them in the freezer and have somebody water the garden, you know, we could still do this. I would love for her to come up there. It would be so much fun. That would be one of the most the highlights of my marriage, I think, is for her to come on this trip with me. It's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. But, you know, duty calls. We've got animals to feed and garden to take care of and all of that. So I guess it's not going to happen. But I'll keep hoping right up until the day that I pull out of here. So we'll see what happens. A lot of stuff going on in the news again. I guess we was talking, and I'm not going to spend any time on it because it makes me sick to my stomach. That Bruce Jenner, you know, Bruce Jenner. Yes, he was not a good looking man, but he was somebody. You know, he was an idol that the jocks looked up to because of his accomplishments in the sports world and whatnot. And it just it's befuddling to me how someone that with that kind of reputation and that kind of background and all of this, why in the world would someone choose to do it? And I've said this before, and I'll say it again, and I mean it. Whether he's queer or not, I'm assuming that he probably is, but that's telling me that you think, you meaning him, not you meaning you, you think that God has made a mistake. Every one of these idiots, these absolute freaking morons out there that decide that they want to, now it's one thing to say, well, I'm going to turn myself into a girl, but it's different. It's still wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm dying and I don't approve. But when you come up and say, I am a girl, I am a girl trapped in a boy's body or vice versa, then you're telling me that you think God made a mistake. That is absurd to me. It's absolutely absurd. And every one of these people that think that, who was another one that did that? Somebody, wasn't it Cher Bono's daughter? What was her name? Chastity? Wasn't it her, or was it Chelsea Clinton? I don't think it was Chelsea Clinton. I think it was Chastity Bono. And she's what now? Charles or some Chaz, I think. Chaz Bono. Yeah, that's right. That's who it is. I'm gonna tell you that God does not make mistakes in anything. Any mistakes that's made, liberals are not God's mistake. God put those people on here just like anybody else. They are a mistake, but it's not God's mistake. God doesn't make mistakes. Just get that right out on the table here. So anything that you have done, said, caused, accomplished, failed in, whatever, is primarily your fault, not God's. So let's just move right on now and get away from there. You know, the guy that I've talked to, a couple of people that went down to the protest or the deal down in Phoenix, where they were having the First Amendment freedom of speech rally and having the Muhammad drawing rally number two. Well, it was not nearly as big as the guy had hoped for. He really thought that this was going to be a big deal. And it really wasn't. There was several hundred people there, but it wasn't nearly what he had hoped for it to be. So, this guy says now, he said, I'm going into hiding. This is tyranny, terrorism right here in America. And on top of that, On top of that, he has set up a GoFundMe account trying to earn $10 million for his family's security. $10 million. Now, let me explain to you about the security that I could provide for myself if I had $10 million. Boy, would I be secure. Happy, comfortable, well-fed, well-entertained, and very safe for $10 million. I'd have Tampico Scout be my chief of security, and I'd have Edge of the Woods be my in-house medical guy, and I'd be plenty safe, and they'd be well paid. This guy set up another GoFundMe account. It was shut down after 3 days. He earned $300. So go buy a couple of High Points, and that's going to be about the best you can do. But anyway, and if you're going to do this stuff, and this is something that we all have to think of, this is something that B2 Basic and Tampico Scout have to think of, this is something I have to think of. When we go out and stir up stuff, whatever it is that you do, there's always that possibility that there's going to be repercussions. Whether it is assassination attempts, bank accounts seized, homes seized, thrown in jail, whatever. There's lots of things that could happen. And you need to take that into consideration before you get out there and start running your mouth and causing a bunch of, if you're not willing to accept those risks for your family, then you need to shut up. Because there are risks involved in this type of activity. And, you know, your family needs to understand that. You need to be candid with them and let them know that, this could happen. I don't want it to happen, but I can't. Eddie Crump, there we go. There's part of the rest of my security team there. Well, not the rest of it. I'll probably need about 10 guys or 20 or 50 or something. You have to, like I said, you have to be candid with them and let them know that the possibilities are there for things to go bad and to interrupt or affect our family life. And tell them what you're doing it for. Tell them what the repercussions could be, and tell them what the goals are and why we're doing it. And as far as I'm concerned, God will have to be a part of that discussion. Faith has got to be a part of that discussion. Patriotism has got to be a huge part of that discussion. Good people and our ancestors and founding fathers have to be a part of that discussion. Our own ancestors, many of us, most of us, need to be a part of that discussion. Because this is a little bit difficult for some people to understand, especially kids. And if you're not willing to risk that family interruption and the possible, in all the different possibilities that we already talked about, if you're not willing to do that, then probably you should not get too terribly involved. Spend your time logistically helping those that are out there on the front lines doing this stuff. And there's no shame in that. You know, regardless of what people say, there is no shame. Everybody is plumbed differently. Everybody has different ideas, different goals, different things, and God has a different plan for every single individual. This is starting to sound like a Sunday school class, isn't it? Every single individual in this world has a different mission, a different goal, and a different plan that God has made for everyone. So for someone to say, well, you're a coward, or you're a punk, or you're whatever because you don't stand up, That's not true. Leave them alone. Now, to say that you're going to stand up and then don't do it and be a big, I'm going into hiding. I fear for my life. He says, I'm not going to make one dime off of this. It's not for profit. He said, I'm going to provide this, fortify my house, and I'm going to do this, that, and the other, and protect my family. Well, you should have been thinking about that $10 million probably before you started running your mouth about this rally and stuff. The rally was a failure. It cost the taxpayers millions of dollars. There was probably more cops down there than there was protesters. And so, you know, if you want to get $10 million, I'd suggest that you give $2 or $3 million of it back to Maricopa County and the city of Phoenix. And help pay the taxpayers back for your miserable failure. The concept and the idea was sound, but it just wasn't well thought out. So anyway, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. And that sure did hurt. I just banged my fingernail on the edge of the table. Now I can't go to Washington. Now I broke a nail. Damn it. Oh well. Okay, let's, $10 million, wow.
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But Ian, this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
There you go. All right. Let's move on. Oh, let's listen to this. I like this. It's not, we're kind of in between stories here. So let's listen to John Wayne for a minute.
It never fails to surprise me that there are still vast lands of the United States literally uncultivated.
Well, it won't be this way long. Come the private airplane, people will start spreading around.
Wouldn't it be wonderful to be part of the new world?
Well, I don't think it will change as much as some people think.
Oh, but it must.
Why?
For too long we've had that laissez-faire attitude toward executive operation. We must educate ourselves to share the responsibilities as well as the advantages of citizenship.
Oh, I read that book, too. It certainly made an impression on you, what that writer had to say. But it's a lot of hooey, fixing everybody up when they let out their first squawk. Giving them pointers on good government between bottle feedings. And teaching them in school to be good little ladies and gentlemen and not smack each other around.
Oh, it's very easy to make fun of everything.
Listen, Miss Clutch. Have you ever heard of some fellas who first came over to this country? You know what they found? They found a howling wilderness. With summers too hot and winters freezing. Did they have insurance for their old age, for their crops, for their homes? They did not. They looked at the land and the forests and the rivers. They looked at their wives, their kids, and their houses. And then they looked up at the sky and they said, "Thanks, God. We'll take it from here." They were rugged fellows. They were men.
That's what I'm talking about. That is an awesome sound clip right there. I really like that. So, all right, be too basic. I'll be waiting out there at the mailbox. So, I can probably make it with a broken nail. I'll get Amy to put a artificial nail on for me. And that's funny, Eddie Crump. This back when this movie was made, the Clint Eastwood movie, Dirty Harry, the .44 Magnum was the most powerful production handgun in the world by quite a long shot. The .44 Magnum became the most powerful handgun in the world in 1956, in late 1955, and wasn't passed up for a lot of years till there were a few custom guns. You know, John Linebaugh and some of the guys like him made a few custom guns that were certainly more powerful than 44 Magnum. But now, you know, since, what, mid to late 90s, somewhere in there, maybe 2000, 2002, I'm not sure exactly when some of these others came out. The 44 Magnum now is, you know, it's still as powerful as it ever was, but it's a pussycat compared to some of these other ones. There's the 460 Smith & Wesson Magnum, the 454 Casull, the 500, 500 Smith & Wesson, and then, of course, the not counting the Contender and all the single-shot calibers, you know, and rifle calibers that it's in. But as far as production, certainly revolvers, there's at least three, maybe four, that are substantially more powerful than the 44 Magnum. And I tell you, 44 is a hoss now. I like it. I don't have a handgun for it anymore. As I told you before, I started thinning the herd some time back, actually when I was in Pine Top. No, so I guess I probably started when I was in Luna. I started looking at the future of what's going on here, and I said, you know what? I don't need to be nursing all these guns right here. I'm going to wind up having to destroy them or worry about somebody else getting them or something like that when everything happens. So I need to get rid of the things that are not popular calibers, not NATO calibers, and you know, long time, you know, 30-06, 30-30, stuff that's been around for a century, you know. The only thing I really have now that doesn't fit in that category is the 338.6, and it's expendable. It's that and a 10mm, they're both expendable. They could go away, and everything else is something that needs to be made every effort to hold on to. I've even thinned the herd down on my Glocks a little bit. I think I'm down to, I'm going to get rid of one more, and I'll be down to, I don't know, 7 or something like that. And I'm down from 13. I had 13 Glocks for 13 or 14 for quite a while. And so I thinned out a bunch. So I can't use all those. I did most of them. I had them when I was selling, you know, the grip reductions and the Duracoat and the, you know, all of this kind of stuff. I needed all these examples of guns that I had, personal guns that I had done all this to. Because I said, yeah, here's one right here. You can look at, feel it, get it, put it in your hand, see what it feels like. And we can go out to the range and I'll let you shoot it if you want. And I tell you, we sold a ton of grip reductions. We probably modified we'd modified somewhere in the vicinity of 2,600 Glocks with grip reductions and whatnot. That's now counting the thousands we did trigger jobs on and little stuff, you know, aftermarket accessories and things like that. But major modifications, we did somewhere in the vicinity of 2,600 guns. And I just, 43s are available, Yakima Glock. The J&G sales had some just the other day. Now, I don't know if they have any now. They probably didn't last long. I'm suspecting that once they advertise them, they probably go out same day. But if you're diligent and stay on there, if you want one, stay on the internet, check everything. And I tell you, whenever you set your alarm and get up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and spend 20 minutes going through a few websites when the shipments come in late and everything, and you'll find one. If you want one, you'll find one. Haven't heard of any issues at all with the 43 yet, but we're not going to yet. You know, there's, even if there were some pretty serious issues, we're not going to hear about them yet because most of them that's out there probably haven't fired 50 rounds yet. But, we'll, you know, give it 6 months and, we'll, you know, we'll hear something about it, if there is anything to hear about it. But I doubt we will. There hasn't been, of all the different Glock models that there is, and all the different calibers and styles and sizes and everything, you know, there's been very, very few inherent problems. The original first generation Glock 17, they had a rebuild, not a rebuild, a, shoot, what do you call it? Anyway, a kit to put in that one pretty shortly after they came out, you know, the first few years there. And, yeah, the Glock 36 was a little bit troublesome for a little while. I think all that's ironed out. They had, a kind of perceived problem with, what do they call the chambers cut too deep right there? We talked about it the other night. I'm not able to think right now. I got too much stuff going on in my mind. But anyway, they had a little perceived problem with that, and I don't think it was nearly the problem that everybody made it out to be. And really that, they made the RTG or whatever it was, the rough textured grip. That was a stupid idea. That didn't last very long, and about one season and they were gone. But that didn't have anything to do with the reliability and everything of the gun. it was just a dumb idea. Unsupported chamber. Thank you, Yakima Glock. Jeez. But, there really just hasn't been, very many problems at all. The, everybody poo-pooed the 45 gap when it came out. And I'm going to tell you what, while we were in Farmington, when we sold almost 4,000 Glocks, the 45 gap was our third best-selling caliber. Right behind the, not in ammo, but in guns. We did sell a lot of 45 gap ammo. We sold, of course, a lot more 45 ACP because there was a lot more 45 ACPs out there. But in gun sales, Glock sales, yeah, we sold some XDs and 45 gap too, a few. The 45 gap was the third most popular right behind the 9mm and the 40. And I've still got probably 1,000 rounds of 45 gap ammo. I'm probably going to bring it up to the Arms Expo with me and see if I can get rid of it. I don't have a 45 gap. If I went back to the 45 and was assured that I was going to have plenty of ammo, I would shoot the 45 gap. The 45 gap is, it's a great caliber. Great caliber. And, let's see. Amy's trying to get something to me there. The, I've got targets, pictures of targets and stuff in the 45 gap, and I'll tell you what, it is exceedingly accurate. It shoots very, very, very well. Out of every different size that they had, that the 37, 38, and 39, we took the 39, the little subcompact 45 gaps, and fired some, you know, nickel-sized groups at 7 yards, where they shoot really well. All of them. We never had a single one that wasn't any more or less accurate than another. They did real well. The pressure and the velocity was, the pressure of the 45 gap was up somewhere as near the... a 45 ACP plus P, and the beauty of it was that we were getting a slightly, very slightly, better velocities with the same bullet weights out of a gun with the same size grip as a 9mm. What's not to love? I don't know why. It's kind of tapered off now. It's not nearly as popular as they were. But if I went back to the 45 gap and knew that I could always get ammo, or if I was going back to the 45 caliber, which I won't, but if I did and knew that I could always get ammo for it, the 45 gap would be my baby. That would be what I'd go with. The grips can be reduced and everything down to the same size as the same thing that you can do with the 9mm and the 40 and the 357 SIG. And there's just no way to go wrong with it. It's a great caliber, and I'm surprised that there's not more people that shoot it. There's even a few law enforcement agencies that went to the 45 Gap. And so we'll see what goes on with that. And like I said, I've got probably close to 1,000 rounds, and I'm thinking about bringing that up to the Arms Expo just to see if I can get rid of it up there. All right. Well, I'm going to get things in order here a little bit, so I'll be right back.
Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality. Open your eyes. Look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low. Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter to me. Just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama,
you can't.
All right, that was Queen with the Bohemian Rhapsody. That's kind of a long deal there, but thought I'd throw that in there for those of you. I'm trying to be a little bit more, a little bit. I'm not going out of my way, but I'm trying to be a little bit more accommodating for some of you that like that kind of music and play one every once in a while on a break. But don't get me wrong, and don't get used to it. I'm not going to do it often, but I'll throw one in there once in a while. You know, we have talked numerous times over the years, different stories have come up about people open carrying and doing different things. You know, I told you the story about me open carrying into the bank there for in New Mexico for 6 months before anybody ever noticed, and those kind of things. We've talked about the pros and cons of open carry, and one of them is that anybody but the most accomplished bad guy or law enforcement officer or high speed low drag ninja warrior is not going to notice. And this proves a point. This proves my point right here. This was down in, I believe it was in Boca Raton, Florida. A guy had a convertible car, and he had a 9 foot long missile, not a fuel pod, an actual missile, in the passenger seat of this convertible, and drove around for an hour in South Florida on the same day that Obama was visiting that area. What happened? Nothing. Nothing at all. Let's see here. You know, they got the rest of the story up here. But anyway, he drove around. He was, I read the whole story. I just don't have it up here. He decided that he would, chance this, and he said, well, you know, the president's gonna be here. This is probably not a good idea. And finally, he just sucked it up and said, all right, well, I'm just gonna do it. So he drove around for an hour within, this was a, I forgot what, I think he said it was a surface to air missile. I don't remember what kind it was, but anyway, it wasn't an RPG tube or anything like that. It was the real missile. It had been disarmed. What happened was there was a lady there who, I guess her husband had brought this home from the war. It'd been demilitarized and he died, and she'd been moving it around from apartment to apartment and everything. Finally, she said, you know what, I'm getting tired of messing with this. And he wound up giving it to this guy, and he was going to take it and auction it off for a charity type thing, you know, with the history behind it and whatnot. And so he I guess he's kind of like me in that regard. Let's go drive around and see what happens. Nothing happened. Now you can't tell me that it's because all of those people would, that all those people are used to it and all that. It's just that I think they're not. Oh, thank you. Oh, don't remember. Don't forget. We have banana bran muffins. Eddie Crump reminds me. So you probably need to make like, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000, and I'll sell them at the Arms Expo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd work. Yeah. Well, right now I'm having some mighty fun. My wife is an awesome cook and bakeress. Right now, I'm having banana bread. Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe I should play that song again or something for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I'll put that down till the end of the show. I did this, most of you probably don't remember the story. C7's not in there. Some of the older guys that's been listening to me for 10 years would remember this story. But I have a model. Matter of fact, I'll have it up there in Yakima. I had a model Glock 26, 27. It is dimensionally perfect. It's exactly a perfect model of the 26, 27. And back during that time, you couldn't carry a handgun into any place, regardless of whether you had a permit or not. You couldn't carry in any place that could that sold liquor, whether it was takeout or open container or whatever. You just couldn't go in there. You couldn't go into Walmart if they sold alcohol. And so that was when, not too long after they passed their concealed carry law, and that's the way it was there for probably 3 years or 4 years. And, probably 2 or 3 years. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to test a theory. So I took this Glock 9mm. I mean, this model of this Glock 26, perfectly dimensionally identical, fits the holsters perfectly. It's good for demonstrations and stuff. I've got several of them. So we set it up in a in a jig there in a vise and put it in the drill press and drilled the barrel out perfectly straight down to about the chamber area with a 3/8 bit. And then took a Full Metal Jacket 9mm bullet and super glued it. We cleaned that hole out real good and super glued that bullet down in the bottom of that hole. So if you pull that on somebody and it's pointed at them and they look in there, they're going to see that bullet. And there, I mean, it was the barrel short enough like that it's not hard at all to see what would be the loaded round in there. So I said, you know what? For now, we had a Walmart right across the street, and my ex-wife said, you know what? They put that Walmart there just for Cope and Jason to go as a playground. We used to go over there and terrorize all the time. It was always getting on them about how they flew their flag or something. You know, we was always over there doing something, and. So I wore this gun over there quite a number of times. And, you know, I wore it over there probably for 2 or 3 months before finally one of the managers noticed it and said, you can't carry that in. That's when I told him, yeah, I can. It's just a toy. I can carry it anywhere. It's not a gun. And some of the cops said, you know, that's a dangerous thing to do. That's probably not very smart. Well, let me tell you what my theory is here. And I think my theory is sound. I couldn't, without risking a felony, I am not going to risk a felony. I'm just not. Not with a, you know, with a federal firearms license and everything else. I'm not going to risk a felony to carry a gun someplace where I'm not supposed to. I won't usually. There has been 2 or 3 exceptions, but not generally, I'm not. So my theory was, if I have this gun dressed the way I dress, the magazine holder on my side with a Glock magazine in it. There is no law against carrying a loaded magazine in there. And I carry this little Glock 26, open carry. I am absolutely 10,000,000% convinced. Hang on a minute. Trying to get that remnants of that banana bread down there. I am 10,000,000% convinced that if something were to happen, let's say that there was a punk in there that grabbed a woman bound around the throat and had a gun and told everybody he hit the floor or whatever, you will never, ever be able to convince me that with my demeanor and my experience, now not that I'm a tough guy, I'm just saying with the training that I've had and the way that I carry myself and everything. I you'll never make me believe that if I didn't whoop that thing out of there and point it over there and tell him, you know, get out on the floor. Do you think he's going to say, let me, you know what? I think you're joshing me. I don't think that gun's real. I don't believe that for one second. He is under, he's under as much stress by doing that for different reasons. He doesn't want to die any more than anybody else does, even when he's on drugs. You know, he still has that, a bit of a self-preservation instinct. And I don't believe that. Now, he may eventually shoot at me or whatever, and then I'm going to be screwed. But I think that I can buy the time for, you know, somebody to come up behind him and bean him in the head with a can of pork and beans or something. And, or maybe he'd buy the whole thing and drop the gun and get down on the floor. But I think it would buy time for the lady who's got his arm around her throat or whatever the case may be. And I've always believed that, and I always will. I don't think you'll ever convince me otherwise. Thankfully they changed the law not too long after that, a year or so. And they fixed it where you could carry a gun, if you had a permit, into a place where it, that sold alcohol, carry out, you know, like Walmart and stuff. You still couldn't carry it in a bar or anything or a restaurant. So, like I said, I'm not going to risk felony. I'm going to go over there. I have my permit. And if I need to go to Walmart or somewhere and get something, well, I was able to. And then they changed the law not too long after that again. They changed it where you could carry, I don't think they've changed it again since, but where you could carry in restaurants that served alcohol as long as they did not have a full liquor license. If they sold beer and wine only and derived over half of their revenue from the sale of food, you know, like Pizza Hut or, you know, any place like that, then, if you had a permit, you can legally carry in there. So they've made advances in their laws ever since 2003. And, every time they've never lost any ground. They did in 2003 because that stupid idiot mayor of Albuquerque, what was his name? I think it was Martinez. Anyway, he's an idiot. Little fat punk. And he managed to get it shut down there for a little while in 2002, and the big court battle and everything, and then he come back and said, the courts come back and said, well, your stupid thing doesn't hold any water, so we're going to go ahead and go on with this. And so they went on with the law, and then the next time the legislature was in session, we got the carrying the guns with a permit in place that sold alcohol for carry out, you know, not for consumption on the premises. And then the next time we got one that the next time we got they changed the whole law about how you qualify in there and the testing and stuff. And then they changed, so we never lost any ground after 2002. It's been steadily uphill since then. So that's a good thing. Every state can't say that, but we have in many states over the last couple, 3 or 4 years, we have gained a lot of ground. It may not be exactly what us freedom lovers and constitutionalists would want, but you know, and I don't think it's compromising. It's just we until somebody is ready to drop the hammer and do the big nasty here, we have to accept the. As long as we're making headway and things are getting better, we're getting laws changed. We're changing people's minds. We're getting people to come around and see our way of thinking. A lot of them. And we've made a lot of progress. And the only way it's ever going to be the way we want it to be nationwide is, you know, suit up in full battle rattle and meet me down at the Crossmore Roads with your truck full of gas and all your gear and we'll go do what we got to do. But until everybody is ready to do that, then we're going to take what we can get and keep moving along. Some of you might be interested to know, and I told you this, I've never liked ARs, and I still don't. But I told you here probably a year ago that if I ever come up on one that was a good price and a decent gun and all that, that I wouldn't mind having one for a truck gun just because they are very, very accurate. And I've never taken that away from the ARs. I've always said that they are exceedingly accurate for what they are. Semi-automatic rifles typically are not that accurate. Most of them are accurate enough, but the AR is an exception. The M1A is an exception. The AK is not an exception. They're not that accurate. And a truck gun for, you know, if you're talking about, 200 or 300 or 400 yard prairie dogs or coyotes or something like that, that's out of the AK's league. You know, I'm just going to have to tell you straight up. I hate to say that, but it is. It's truly a fighting gun and that's it. You know, hitting a man-sized target out 300 or 400 yards is not a big deal, but hitting a coyote out there is going to be the luck of the draw. So, anyway, I came across one. I came across an M&P 15. It's in excellent, pretty much brand new shape. Not quite 100%, but it's 98%. Collapsible stock and, the whole nine yards. I got it for a decent price. So I am now the proud owner of an AR-15. I don't know about the proud owner, but I'm the owner of an AR-15. And, it all worked out pretty good. So that'll be, and I'm going to, I'm probably going to, permanently retire my AK and all accessories and save it for when and if the total balloon goes up and poop hits the fan, then I'll have so many magazines and ammo and so much stuff for the AKs. And, probably going to put that away until the time comes. And this AR will, fill in gaps between now and then until such time as I need to, abandon it and go to my main battle rifle. So yes, Daytinker, I am now the owner of a poodle shooter. And I'll have to say, you know, I do try to be fair. Sometimes it pains me, but I do have to try to be fair. And I'll tell you that since the advent of the faster twist and the heavier bullets, the 62s, 63s, 69s, 70s, there's even one out there that makes an 80 grain. That really, really jumped the AR-15 up. AR-15 up until that point, there was nothing heavier. Sierra made some 70 grain bullets, but they didn't ever go very well. They were kind of a rounded point bullet, and there was no 1 in 8 or 1 in 9 or 1 in 7 twist barrels out there during that time. And everything was 45s, lots and lots of 52s, 53s, 55s. Typically, everything was 55 grain. Full metal jackets, hollow points, they had some 52 grain National Match hollow points, which was an awesome bullet if you had the right barrel twist for it. But when they went to the 62s and 63s and stuff like that, it changed everything. It changed the whole dynamic of that cartridge and that gun. When you pop in there, now it's only, you know, it's only 10 grains difference, 8 grains difference, but that extra weight and that barrel twist does change the ballistics of that bullet, especially your terminal ballistics, substantially. It made a difference. So with that, you know, you've got a lot more choices. Your 55 still shoot okay in it. There's still a lot of that stuff out there. Lots of it. Don't shy away from it. It still shoots fine in the 1 in 7, 1 in 8, 1 in 9, especially the 1 in 9. It may not be, you know, bench rest accuracy, may not be the best prairie dog gun out to 400 yards. But, for coyotes inside of 300 and stuff like that, the 55 grain still works fine. Your 55s, 52s, they're still okay. And, but when you get up into the 62s and 63s, then, we're changing that quite a bit. When you get up into the faster 1 in 7, 1 in 8, you know, the faster the twist, the more you start losing in the 55 grains. But, I think that if you want, a match grade accuracy, then you want to go with the 1 in 7s, but, with the heavier bullets. But if you want something that will suffice, that will still shoot very well with the heavier bullets, but your 52s and 55s will still be useful to you, then go with the 1 in 8 or 1 in 9. The 62s and 63s still work really, really well with that. You'll see a little tiny bit of difference when you go in the 1 in 7s, but you can still use those 52s and 55s and 53s all you want. And you can also go up to the 70s and 75s and all that. Katie, Brad, this isn't new. I've said last year or so, I said that if I that I wouldn't mind having one for a truck gun. I'm still not going to trust it for my main battle rifle, but I'm sure it'll hold me over until I can get to my AK, you know, if that's be the case. So, but we'll play with it, and if I have much trouble with it, I'll guarantee you, it'll go on the chopping block in a heartbeat. I have no emotional ties to it whatsoever. It means absolutely nothing to me. I'm going to hold on to it here until, you know, if I, you know, I'll keep it clean because I know that's an important thing with these. So I'll take care of it. I'm not going to try to make it fail. I'm going to try to keep it running. And if it runs okay, then I'll keep it for a while. But believe me, there are no emotional ties to this gun. So don't be surprised if I come up one day and say, well, it's gone. Got another one. Don't think twice about it. Okay, I still like my lever actions for truck guns too. I've got rid of my, my 30-30. I hate to, but I've got rid of it, partially to help pay for this AR. I've still got two 44 Magnums and a 357 Magnum in the lever action, so I'm not hurting any, and I keep one of those as a truck gun for now. But I'm thinking that I'm probably going to stick that AR in there once I get it sighted in. I messed with it and shot it a little bit today. And the only thing I don't like about these guns, or not the only thing, but the biggest thing that I probably don't like about them, as long as it runs well, is that 223 of a short barrel is so freaking loud. That just irks me to death. You know, the AK is a much milder cartridge because of the diameter than the 223 is. I told y'all about the Contender that I had for a while in 223. I got it in a 12-inch Hunter barrel with the muzzle brake on it. Good God Almighty. I never could get that. Well, I did actually get it shooting well. I told you I loaded it way down. I used Blue Dot actually and loaded it way down. Cost me almost 1,000 feet a second to do it. Now I was shooting like 2400, something like that. I think 2200 feet a second. But I got it down where it would shoot, five-eighths of an inch out of that 12-inch barrel. It shot really, really well, but it was an astonishingly loud gun out of a 12-inch barrel. I was most unimpressed. So I just about turned around and took it back down to Athens, Georgia. I forgot the name of the gun shop down there. There's the only one down there, the big, nice place in Athens, Georgia. And I just about took it back. And I said, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna give it a try. I'm gonna load it up with some pistol powder, slow it down, and get the thing is with that 12-inch barrel and rifle powder, most of it was burning up outside the barrel, and the muzzle flash was flabbergasting, and the noise was just incredible. Once I got that down to some pistol powder that was all burning up inside the barrel, then it cut down on the noise and the recoil and the accuracy. I got it where it shot really well. So there you go. All right, we're running overtime here, so I'm getting out. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for joining me. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.